What is up, my people? Welcome to Fellowship Bible Church's Sermon Spotlight. We're coming at you each and every week with a fresh service to debrief an effort to send biblical truth. What better way to do that than by the power of conversation? I'm Mark Francis in the host seat today with two of my friends who the three of us, I don't believe, have ever been in a Sermon Spotlight podcast
together.
Are you serious?
I'm almost positive about this.
So
we are ready to go. Yeah. You are hearing their voices. We have over here to my right, your audience watching left, Miss Rose Locke. How are you?
I'm doing very well.
Production
Thank you.
Extraordinaire, creative arts extraordinaire coming up here in the Easter season. There's
Super
a lot
fun.
Of behind the scenes things happening. We will get to that at the end.
Good.
Of
Rose is wait. Rose is busy? Is that what you're telling me?
Yes.
Around this building, Rose is busy? And, wow. And you heard it here first.
You hear him with glasses on, ready to go. Mr. Caleb Pearson.
Started wearing my glasses again.
You were in the sermon seat, the teaching pastor seat.
It's the hot
today.
Seat, MF, and you
the
know
hot
it is.
Seat.
Yeah,
we are coming.
Yeah, good
for
to be
you
here.
Today. Yes, thank you so much because it was a great weekend. I want to unpack it, and I know Caleb, you've got some cutting room floor thoughts, but Rose will come your way first with just a reaction of the corporate gatherings that we experienced this past weekend.
Well, first of all, I will say super congratulations to Caleb because I just feel like what you crafted was so great, and you packed so much into that 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. The fact that you covered that entire chapter with like excellent applications was just amazing to
and
me.
Read through and, some of the verses multiple times repetitively, and we still got it in and with very fresh and unique perspectives.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, the most important thing, sort of, the Star Wars reference, you know, like a sermon from
Don't
Caleb.
Let the elders hear you just said
minus
that.
Are we going there now?
The sermon from Caleb minus a Star Wars reference would be, you know, and 2002. Wow, that was a long time ago. That was a surprise.
2005, but
2005.
Yes.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
Get it straight.
2002
Sorry.
Was Attack of the Clones,
okay.
And 1999 was Phantom Menace. But we'll let it slide,
so
Rose.
We are
we'll,
hitting, we'll come back to that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
You're, hey, you're the host. You have to keep us on track here. She brought up Star Wars before I did.
I really believe that people want to get to the spiritual content right
That's
away.
That's true. I heard
so,
that. I hear that word.
So we will cover the fun later. So hang tight.
Yeah.
Push pause on the fun because it's coming. but no, it was, in my opinion, an amazing just 75-minute worship experience where we were able to come away with an just a greatness of God perspective and how we fit into God's story here and now in 2024 when this happened thousands of years ago, that what those guys, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, experienced, we can say, we're not getting thrown to a fiery furnace yet, but how are we reacting to those times of trials in our lives where we are leaning on ourselves or are we leaning on God? And and the culture and the relevancy that you put into it, share with us kind of what was your world like leading up to this, because you had a few weeks to prepare in this one-off sermon that you've been given with Daniel 3. But what was your preparation like and what did you not get to?
Yeah, well, first of all, Rose, it means a lot to hear you say that feedback, because I, the one thing I was praying over in the sense of almost worried about was this is a lot. And I'm gonna be talking fast, like I'm gonna be repeating some verses to just kind of make it all sink in. But had more than a few weeks on this one. I knew it was coming. The original vision, as we even entered into 2024, was this was gonna be 2 weeks. So so I was anticipating Daniel 3, but 2 weeks to do it. And so as I started studying it, I was like, okay, this is gonna be great. Verse 18 is gonna be such an awesome cliffhanger. For a 2 week study of Daniel 3, verse 18 is the but even if he doesn't, our God is So once the preaching schedule kind of shifted a little bit, and I talked with Mark and I greenlit the let's do it, we'll do it all at once, that's fine. Then it was like, okay, Lord, what do I not share, and how do I make sure we cover this whole chapter well, with leaving some stuff out that could be so fun to talk about. So I really wanted to focus on those four C's that I put in the sermon notes, and I chose to spend that much time on the culture because that's what the text chose to do for so long. It wanted us to know who was there and how they all just lined up. They didn't say boo about it. They did it. It was normal. It would have been but weird not to. And so to try to get the value of them standing out as well.
But I found that's what made the sermon impactful, meaningful, and fresh in a way, because you did spend that much time on culture.
I had multiple people, I don't know why so many people knew I was doing Daniel 3 weeks before, but I had people in my life ask me, like, how are you gonna do this? Like, it's Daniel 3. It's one of the easiest passages in Daniel to understand and comprehend as you read it, because it's just a story. And so it's to your point, Mark. What do you focus on beyond the, like, so there it is, folks, right? Great faith in the fire. And so I was like, okay, Lord, there's the 2 Timothy 3, like, I started with that for a reason. In my own study, I wanted that to hit home of, like, this is all in there for me to learn from. What can we learn from their behavior and their mannerisms and their attitude and actions way before they survive the fire? We all think of this story, and it's like, wow, they survived the fire. What about all the faithful stuff they were doing up to that point? And how can that sink in so we look at our culture around us and go, okay, there might be some furnace type stuff going on. That was the hope.
That's one of the things that I think struck me really about the sermon and why, and I'm looking for, I have a copy of your transcript. Mm-hmm. As I shared last time, Caleb is like the transcript.
I'm a wordy, I know. I'm a wordy.
So I have the transcript that I get privy to. And I was looking for a spot that's not jumping out to me at this minute, but again, like often happens to me when I listen to Tim's sermons, there are buried inside, like, you have this great big outline of the four things you want to cover, but buried inside each one of those points this week, Caleb, was this, like, this three-point action plan. And I think one of the most impactful moments of the whole sermon was when you got to that verse and you really stopped for a second and you talked about, you know, would it have mattered if
verse 18
if they had died in the fire, like, it didn't matter to them if they died, but they were still going to follow God. And I think that is the spirit and the voice of martyrs who we look up to, you know, many martyrs over the years, and some of them have died because that was God's plan for them. And others have been, like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, have been able to survive. And I think that is what God calls us to do. And so even inside your sermon, there were like three or four mini sermons. And that's one of the reasons I congratulated you on covering the whole chapter, because you found a lot of important applications in this chapter.
In studying it, I felt like, man, we don't teach 18 a lot. We teach 17 that says, if it be so, our God whom we serve is able to rescue us from the furnace, and he will rescue us from your hand, O King. First of all, I wanted to bring this to the podcast. What a beautiful reminder that there was the possibility of rescue from the furnace, but there was certainty of deliverance from the king's hand.
There's a difference.
So if you study the words there, and I checked all these different translations to make sure that's what the Aramaic is alluding to. I didn't bring this out in the sermon, but you could make a case for they knew what was certain about God's deliverance in terms of the grand scheme of what was happening if they died in the furnace, in their minds, delivered from the hand, versus what God is able to do, which is the practical life rescue of the furnace. It's just a fascinating study there, but people teach 17. God is faithful, trust, 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 you'll get out of the fire, trust, trust, trust. But so many people attend church and they leave because what they're dealing with is a verse 18 in their own life, and they're so sick and discouraged when there's only something being taught that is the happy ending.
And it speaks to us looking forward to that, like, eternal hope and that deliverance that we have from our sin that is more important than being delivered from, you know, some of our day in, day out struggles, right? That ultimate hope in his glory and the deliverance that comes because of the cross, being so much more palpable to us as believers than our day-to-day. And that's where we want to get as we grow spiritually, but in the meantime, we're walking the day-to-day.
Right.
And we're using the word deliver right now. And in some terms, we can also use the word save. And that really is a stumbling block for some of us believers as we look at the word salvation.
That's a great
especially
point.
In the New Testament. And here, coming up on Palm Sunday with the word Hosanna, save us, deliver us. There's this connotations of that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego knew what salvation meant for them. And it was in the here and now they could be saved, but also they knew that they're going to be saved eternally. And what that means for us as Christians today of salvation is so many different layers to it.
Well, and I think, like, I'll just point out, I was using a copy of a Bible version called, is it called the Legacy Standard Version, that was recently released by John MacArthur's seminary, that actually goes back to an earlier version of the New American Standard, is kind of where the translation comes from. And whenever, Caleb, the version you were using, I'm assuming...
It was NASB 95.
NASB 95. Yeah. Whenever your version said deliver, this version often said save. Mm. And a couple times your version said save, and this version used deliver. So actually those words are very parallel, even in the passage that we were looking at on Sunday.
Yeah.
I'll just throw that out there.
Yeah. So it was, you know... What's the main point? What's the main idea? And again, if it is just a story, like we're not tackling prophecy and what we think of all these dreams, we're hearing a life account of these from the hand of Daniel, who wasn't there, so he heard it. But what is the application then? And how can we look at our world with a Daniel 3 lens? Like, that was what I was hoping to come across, and that's why the application was really only detailed in the sense of two questions. I really wanted to not bite off more than I can chew in the sense of, like, okay, with the time remaining, can I challenge our community groups, I think is what was my specific challenge. These two questions over the next couple of weeks, if you guys get a chance to come together, share these stories with one another, even so we just build up an ability to recognize, okay, God might actually be positioning me in a way that there might be a Chaldean in my life, or there might be other people bowing down to something else, or whatever that is. Because those
the political components of this are real for us even today. Looking at the culture and the political components of the religious, I'm not going to bow down and worship, but I'm also going to do what I can to obey. But there's a point. I'm drawing a line in the sand. And I think we believers, even here now, wrestle and struggle with that obedience and submission versus drawing the line in the sand. And we might as believers be drawing a line in the sand too early, potentially, in our world today. And so how we can learn and learn a lesson from this of what did they do that was submission, and what did they do
that was disobedience?
Yes, right.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why that's one thing you only touch on, and you just say, okay, see that they're submitting to what's getting ready to happen, even though they're very clearly disobeying. How can we take that mentality and philosophy? And then the tension too, Mark, you brought up was, okay, like how political is this going to get? Like the Star Wars example, like obviously I love Star Wars, but I'm not just going to throw that around lightly. And I don't want the pulpit to become this silly little fictional place, but I wanted to start with the fictional example of something that can put a picture in people's heads. And then immediately, I don't like to do that often, three examples back to back like that, but I did want to jump into the example from Germany and the example from Ghana, which I would argue, I mean, they're brutal, and I think it actually got worse. The whoever serves Adolf Hitler serves God quote is so like, ugh, but everyone's so familiar with that one. The Ghana one, I hope, surprised a lot of people, because when I found that out, I couldn't believe
it. It's relevant.
That a statue inscription could go to that degree.
That was just out of curiosity.
1960, 60. I believe. I know the statue came down in a revolt that happened in 1966, but it should have been 60, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Well, I wondered...
it just happens. I wanted to paint. I was like, this is part of our history.
Yeah, this is not 4,000 years ago. This is like 40, 60 years ago. Yeah.
Well, and I wondered, Caleb, just a couple things again, because I get to sit in some advanced prep for these things.
Sure.
You referenced, as we were sitting and talking through this portion of the text, you referenced a sermon that you felt like was really well done. And I thought maybe the listeners would like to hear, like, someplace they could go for another kind of taste of the idea of submission to government.
Yeah, it's Dennis McNutt's sermon from years ago. He did a whole thing on submission versus obedience. It's been more than a couple years. I don't remember the title of it, but I think it could come up in our website archive. But it's stuff like that where it really deserves its own time.
Well, it's on Romans chapter 8. Is that correct?
That sounds right.
Search it and we can
post
the link.
We'll put a link for it.
I have a feeling it was in the Romans series.
You're right. It was. You're right.
About 3 years. It was around Easter time, COVID time, because I remember the visuals that were associated with it. So I think we could probably
find that. Good. I can put it in the links to this podcast. Great. That's a great resource as
Thank
well.
You.
But
The other thing I want to ask, yeah, though, so you did send two questions, mm-hmm, and I think there was kind of a hidden. So the first question you said is, how are we positioned for impact? And yes, I feel like that question is pretty obvious what you're asking. Mm-hmm. But the next question, I feel like maybe some further explanation as to what your intention was. Because mm-hmm, the second question is, how are we prepared for intensity? And I have a feeling you chose intensity because of the I's, impact and intensity. And so I just wanted, would you clarify what, yeah, you mean by us facing intensity? I think it will help inform conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you look at the text, Daniel 3, and the intensity they faced. It starts out with verse 13, and I love that it describes Nebuchadnezzar as furious with rage, but then everything he does doesn't actually seem that furious. He starts a formal trial. Is it true that you did this? And then he gives them a chance. Now, if you're ready, you're going to bow down. I think that's a very intense situation with no wrath yet. So what I hope to portray with that question of how are we prepared for intensity is, we can do the Christian thing, but what happens when you are actually coming face to face with something along those lines?
Yeah, so it's what
is it true, Christian, that you're going to go about it this way? Because if you're ready, here's a different approach. Right. Like, I think so that can really happen in our life a lot.
So what you're really asking is, are we prepared, mm-hmm, to face opposition?
Yes.
Yeah.
That'd be a good way of putting it. Yeah. Yeah. And which is a fascinating question, because their answer was, we don't need to defend God. Like I think a lot of people, and that's one thing I didn't unpack, when you study it, why didn't they give a defense? Why they pled guilty. They said, we don't need to answer you on this matter. And I think it's because they were like, we don't need to defend God. Like, people get so wrapped up in how are they going to defend themselves? All they're defending is their worship of God, their obedience of God. They're like, God's going to handle it. I'm not the defender. Like, they are taking the passive role so that God, the active defender of our souls, can work instead of them.
Right, which brings more glory to his name.
Of course
when
it does, yes.
When we ourselves step away from taking his place and his role,
very good,
then he is, yep, glorified greater, mm-hmm, than if we ourselves stepped, mm-hmm, in and did those things.
They,
right?
could have said, oh, King Nebuchadnezzar, you have made us leaders over the province of Babylon. Cut us slack just this one time. we're just honoring a previous conviction. Can you please let it slide? They put their foot down and said, guess what, King? And they were respectful and kind of him the whole time,
yes,
which is a huge lesson in there.
Yes.
But they said, go ahead, King, you're going to need to follow through on what you're getting ready to do. And I love that when he follows through, he loses his absolute mind. I stand by that, because the text is hilarious that Daniel gives it in Aramaic. I don't know why he repeats the daggone command a billion times. The moment you hear the sound of the blah, 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 if you don't, you'll immediately be cast into the furnace. And then the first opportunity he has to cast somebody into the furnace, it's not immediate. And he adds this wrath and this personal vendetta. And it's just mayhem. It's a king unhinged. And I love the picture of that.
That's what I appreciate about where you went with the sermon, because mm-hmm, you can take this passage and say, okay, don't bow down to idols and
right,
don't do these things. And this is, yep, how to worship and,
yep,
and look at what God can do. And he can rescue us and he can save us. There's so much more to this,
which
passage
is what everybody gets when they read Daniel 3.
Right.
So I was like, what's in here that we don't often, and I think it's a character study of Nebuchadnezzar, to be perfectly honest with you.
I was going to ask you about that. We could
let's study his behavior.
Take an absolute week or two, mm-hmm, on character study of Nebuchadnezzar.
Oh, yeah.
Going back, and this is what I wanted to bring up for us to chat about real quick, going, mm-hmm, back to Daniel 2,
mm-hmm,
and the dream,
right,
and how he has these personality shifts
yeah,
all the time.
Yeah.
And here we're seeing it again here in Daniel 3,
mm-hmm,
and he takes it to where you need to bow down and worship this or die, mm-hmm, to then at the end of Daniel 3, he's like, now you got to like look and see these guys, God, you know, mm-hmm, they've got it together, mm-hmm, to tear you limb for limb. But what is going on in the heart of Nebuchadnezzar,
mm-hmm,
to where he has these dreams?
Or the head.
Or, yeah, right, the head of that statue.
The head of,
right,
Nebuchadnezzar.
Yeah. Right.
The power, mm-hmm, struggle, to where he sees this dream and Daniel explains it to him in Daniel 2.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden, he's almost taking an image or some sort of statue from that dream and creating a golden image in the likeness of maybe even his dream, potentially.
Yeah.
It's just a complete
twist.
Well,
part of it is, I think part of it is cultural, right? Because, mm-hmm, you have this situation and we all recognize this. And I think Mark Carey maybe touched on this in a sermon a couple weeks ago about the culture of the times.
Right.
And this idea that, like, when the Tower of Babel caused people to split, they took part of, there is a God, there is a creator. They took those ideas with them as mm-hmm. they separated into people groups. So there is this knowledge built into men that there is a God, right? Right. And so, but culturally, you are surrounded by like golden mm-hmm. calves and, you know,
and there's
this image and that image.
There was obviously that many people present that when these three didn't bow down, the king didn't notice right away. So there was enough people at this in this event that they saw and then they sent to the king. So there's a ton of people involved. So you got to put yourself in the shoes of the king a little bit and say, like, man, he had an audience. People were going to watch what he was going to do. But I agree with you. His character arc is, I don't know if it's two steps forward, one step back. Yeah. It's probably one step forward, two steps back, but it's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy. Not a traditional arc. He is, you end Daniel 2 and you're like, oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Nebuchadnezzar's going to turn good.
Figured it out.
And then, which is a reason a lot of the scholars, not a lot of them, some of them, they think a ton of time passes between Daniel 2 and 3 simply because of that fact. They're like, who would get a dream from God and that quickly turn it into their own selfish gain? But the text doesn't tell us there's a gap.
How often do our hearts do similar things, right?
All the time.
And so that's why I'm saying, like, he's surrounded by a culture of, like, idolatry, and his heart does that. How often do our hearts do that in the culture that we live in, where we see God move and we are inspired.
The line.
And then 6 months later.
Oh, yeah.
We've kind of forgotten.
Six minutes later. Yeah. The line between, wow, God gave me a dream, and wow, God gave me a dream.
Yes.
That's a thin line.
Yeah.
And if you're already king and no one's going to check you.
Right.
This is also a lesson on why the multiplicity of leadership is a great thing.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much in there.
Yeah.
Can I just add one more thing for the sake of time?
Yeah, I want to add something too. Go ahead.
We didn't talk about the statue for a lick. Like, that's another thing I felt a little bit of attention on. I'm like, I'm really not talking about the statue, what it looked like. So I wanted to unpack that a little bit. I mentioned the statue at the end of the sermon. We know what it looks like now, and it looks like nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we landed. But there's some fascinating, fun stuff to study in here. For example, if all scripture is inspired and profitable, and this is a question I still have for my God and King, why do I need to know it's 60 cubits and it's width 6 cubits? What do I do with that information? By the way, that's 90 feet tall, 9 feet thick. And if you can't picture that, that's weird.
Well, and now
that is a weird, skinny-looking, weird-looking thing. So the question is, what in the world did this statue look like? It was a question I got from people.
And consider how long it took people without tools to build that.
Right. And so because of that, some scholars think it was actually in the ground, so it itself was 90 feet tall, but not in the appearance on the land. That's one theory. Another theory is it was almost more like a large totem pole with maybe just a head. So for example, how does Daniel 2 tie into the statue of Daniel 3? Well, the answer is we don't necessarily know, but he could have just done the head.
Right.
Because I find it hard to believe it's an exact replica of his dream, because why would he want to honor so many empires that are going to come after him? Maybe he did.
Right. But it's gold.
But it's gold.
Yeah.
And so the whole statue was referred to as a statue of gold. Most scholars don't think the whole thing was gold start to finish, but it was laid with gold and wood and similar to other Babylonian sculptures they have been able to find. But it's just you can picture it all you want, and it was a weird, wonky-looking religious opportunity to deny God his credit, to be the only one we worship.
And I was wondering if there was any, I learned this from Mark Carey a long time ago. I always wondered, like, is it important that it's on the plain of Dura? Like, where, I was wondering about the geography of the whole situation, Caleb, just a little bit. Like, where was the plain of Dura? How far did people have to travel to get there? Like, all those kinds of questions.
And
which I know you didn't have time to get
it's good.
Which we can easily find.
Right. And I had,
resources
it would have been a way early draft, but I did have a map of where a lot of people think they know exactly where this might have happened. And some of the pictures of this place, you can actually picture a lot of people and maybe picture the encounter. Problem is, that's not biblical, and I ended up cutting it. But the plain of Dura, so we know it was going to be seen from a ways away, and it was going to become the landmark of that region. And so again, I just, due to time, due to whatever, I just chose to lean a little heavy into the irony that we know what it looks like now.
And as a kid, I've always thought, what kind of furnace exists to where you can look inside
of it? Isn't that so fascinating?
And not be burned, because people got burned as they approached it. But Nebuchadnezzar is hanging out, and they didn't have binoculars back then.
Well, what kind of fuel? And how did you get that much wood?
That's always as a kid growing up. You're that's what makes this story so fascinating, because you can just mentally just be like, put yourself there.
Yeah,
what did it look like?
Some people think the king had a vision of them in the fire, but the text seems to indicate he was literally seeing into the fire and engaging with people as he was looking. I didn't unpack the fact that part of his proceeding was to put them in all their clothes. Like, the text is so specific. He didn't take his time just to kill them. He wanted to wipe their existence off the face of the earth. He didn't want them to have a possession left behind. And so much so, and I let me see if I can read it. This is the ESV I have here. Let me see. Because verse 22, he gives us two reasons why those men died. Because the king's order was so urgent and the furnace was overheated, they ended up dead. So you can picture the chaos and the king's order being so quick that they didn't have time to reason with themselves what they were doing, right? Like, grab these men and throw them in. If that order is so urgent and the fire so hot, it probably happened so quickly that those men didn't see what was coming and they ended up dying because of it. I don't know if it was three of them. I think it'd be ironic if it was, but man, there's so much there that you kind of breeze over and you're like, this is how it happened and it's crazy. But I wanted people to leave with an appreciation of the story and as much vivid imagery of it as possible so that we can recognize when we're in similar shoes. That was kind of
the image, again, back to Romans 8 then, of we are more than conquerors.
Yeah.
Is just a great takeaway to be in awe of God so much that, like, yeah, we know how the story ends, as one of the songs we sang says. Mm-hmm. We are more than conquerors. We're victorious because of him.
Right.
And they, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, had such faith, such conviction in God that they're willing to go through this process without fighting. I mean, without arguing, God is so big that I know that he's got this.
And it ended up witnessing to the stubborn leader among them.
Right.
So much so that he caused them to prosper. I love that the text says that. The king caused them to prosper. There's a hint of, this is a whole other thing. There's a hint of God's will versus man's autonomy to be able to do something. It was in God's will for the king to cause them to prosper. Because of this event, I have seen God. You will prosper in Babylon.
And back to the character study of Nebuchadnezzar, if I can jump ahead, keep reading as you progress into Daniel 4:1. Nebuchadnezzar the king to all the peoples, nations, and men of every language that live on the earth. Here's what he says. May your peace abound. It has seemed good to me to declare the signs and wonders which the Most High God, and that's capitalized, so he's talking about God, Jehovah, Yahweh, has done for me. How great are his signs, and how mighty are his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion is from generation to generation. He sounds like King David right there.
That's good, Mark. Right. That's really good.
I think that really strongly. A couple weeks ago, we did a benediction in the worship service. It's actually Darius, I think. One of the kings in Daniel actually proclaims it. And so the fact that these, like, the king of Babylon is declaring that our God is the Most High. I mean, that...
And one story did it. One event. This was an afternoon. This was an afternoon.
That is only the work of our sovereign God.
That's a great point, Mark. Daniel 3:1, King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold. Daniel 4:1, King Nebuchadnezzar to all peoples, nations, and languages, peace be multiplied to you. The Most High God has done signs and wonders.
Yeah.
Their faith made that happen. We're more than conquerors.
And his character story continues. Yeah. It doesn't end here.
Right. I mean, which is like, yes, so we can do Daniel 3. We can check the box. We can say, hey, God is faithful in the fire. And then we can close worship with singing, there's another in the fire. And then we can all go about our day. Or we can realize, wait a second, because of that Romans 8 passage, and because of who God is, there is an implication in our lives. We are more than conquerors. Nothing is going to separate us from the love of Christ.
Yeah.
Not the Chaldeans, not the king, not a furnace. There's no corporate punishment on planet Earth that can separate us from the love of Christ.
Which carries us back to, we kind of started this conversation, or close to the beginning of the conversation, we talked about the whole Adolf Hitler quote, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's kind of where the rubber meets the road here, in a sense, because we as believers are called to be able to recognize that, right? There was an entire country of people that could not recognize that statement.
Mm-hmm.
is a lie and is false. Mm-hmm. And so I think we as believers are called to be able to discern what is godly, and to use these stories like the fiery furnace to help guide our steps as we're called to make decisions as we move about our lives.
That's a great
whether
point.
They be political, whether they be personal, in any mm-hmm. kind of setting.
Well, we can keep going, but guys, I'll just continue to share with you. Use this conversation to spur on your own conversations, whether it be your community groups or your discipleship mm-hmm. groups or your family, because there's so much to unpack here mm-hmm. in each and every week that we're studying Daniel, and it's great. And Caleb, final thoughts and questions. We love to grill Mark Carey for his kind of just, you know, one-off phrases that are just cliches and things like that. You had a few this past week. more money, more problems. Some amazing sure. cultural references here.
Yeah. I was surprised at how many people knew the Star Wars quote, by the way.
There's no party like a Babylon party. Because uh-huh. the Babylon party don't here's stop. Party, like, I mean, yeah. West Coast party, there's also a mm-hmm. P-phone. I mean, I can go back. We're oh, making yeah. major cultural references here. I'm not oh, going to yeah. call you out for a pop quiz of where they came from. You can do your own references, guys. But Caleb, you're bringing some fresh, unique phrases to the pulpit.
Yeah. Yeah, it was so fun.
We appreciate that.
And yeah. falling on St. Patrick's Day, too, was awesome. Yep. Mark didn't plan that. I didn't plan that. I truly think the Spirit's at work in the way we get to unpack these passages at certain times in the year where it really does feel like, man, cool. this ties into what we're doing. So yep. looking forward to the Easter.
Rose, I'm going to give you Easter the announcement season. Window here okay. because Easter season is upon us. And there's some really cool creative things happening behind the scenes and about ready to become in front of the scenes. So Palm Sunday, Good Friday, Easter.
Yeah, fire super away. Cool stuff. I just love the church calendar. And I think sometimes like there are churches that like really lock into that church calendar. Historically, Fellowship Bible Church has not done that as much. But one of the things I think the church calendar does is it allows us to examine those different facets of who God is, right? And different parts like in December, we have set aside a whole month to really talk about that Christ was God made flesh, right? And in March, April, however the seasons work, it gives us the opportunity to really talk about the fact that Christ died on the cross for our sins, and so we can have access to the Father and all of those things that come about as a result of the cross, and there are a ton of them, I'll just say that. So we got some really cool stuff happening. If you haven't been up to the library to see Garden to Garden, it's an incredible work of art that has so many layers. Scott Santmeyer did a lot of the original design. The congregation themselves have been, I'll just tell you a story. So this past weekend, Saturday evening, I walk out of my office and here is Mike Lucan surrounded by about six kids, ages, let's say 5 to 10. And Mike Lukens is standing there working on this piece of art, and these kids are standing there working on a piece of art, and there's a mom. There's a kid who says, it's really sad that Jesus had to die on the cross. And there's a mom that's engaging her kid in why Jesus had to die on the cross. And just what a beautiful picture of how God can use things like creative arts and how our children can engage. And what a wonderful worship moment, because anything we do motivated to worship our Lord and Savior, it just brings glory to his name. So it's a really cool piece of art. It's one of the things that makes it super cool is if you get close to it and zone in on part of it, you'll see God's word come to life in that little section. But when you stand far away from it, you just see a beautiful picture of last week of Christ's life. So it was such a God thing that it even happened, I'd say 6 weeks ago, it didn't even exist in anybody's creative imagination.
So and now it's just God. Coming to life.
And now it's coming to life. It's really cool and really awesome. Exciting.
And we're going to incorporate that.
Yeah, so that's going to be an important piece of Good Friday. In fact, Good Friday is going to completely center around that piece of art. And so there's going to be some great readings, and there's going to be some poetry. There's going to be some classical music presented. There's going to be this Easter season is just God is just shaping up to do some really cool creative things in the process. And we've got Natalie Perkins has done a lot of our design. There's going to be some great stained glass windows everybody's going to get to see this weekend. We've had a bunch of people who love to do these sorts of things around the church just helping us out with those. So it's going
to
be super fun.
Seeing the arts and come to life around here.
Yeah,
really
and
cool.
if you love yeah. the arts and you want to get involved in doing stuff like this,
find
me.
Rose.
Call there you me because like we've had poets doing writing, and it's just been
Yep.
Amazing.
But this coming weekend with Palm Sunday, children are going to worship with us. So you'll check your children in, but they're going to attend the singing time with us. And there's going to be children on stage. So we're going to have the excitement of the Palm Sunday.
There's going to be
enthusiasm.
Opportunities for kids to do some palm weaving out in the lobbies. And it's just, it's going to be fun week.
Yep. So that's this weekend. Then you've got Good Friday services, 4 and 7 o'clock on that day. Then you have Easter weekend, 5 services, the FSAT crowd at 5 o'clock, and then 4 different services on Sunday morning, 8, 9:30, and 11.
And
11 o'clock is upstairs and downstairs.
If you don't want to be crowded out, you might want to come to 8 if you're an early bird.
Mm-hmm. So. If you're the early bird, FSAT Saturday night or 8 o'clock on Sunday morning, that's going to get you a seat. So come early and be ready to worship. So that's just the next 2 weeks here at FBC in our corporate gatherings.
And cool stuff coming. I just tell you guys, this is so much fun. I get to see all this stuff happening. There's some cool stuff coming over the course of the summer too. So we're going to do an outdoor service, Father's Day, stuff like that is happening. So.
Yep. Caleb, thank you, sir.
Yeah, dude.
Appreciate
thanks for having
it.
Me.
Rose, thank you.
My pleasure.
Continue to add a lot. Thanks for you guys watching and listening and being a part of today's episode. Continue to engage with us. Let us know if you have additional questions or thoughts or comments, feedback. We always love to hear from you. The easiest way to do that is to go to fbcva.org/podcasts, and you'll see all the different podcast platforms that we have out there and how you can actually submit questions and engage with us. Remember that if people haven't checked out the Sermon Spotlight, let them know that they can find us YouTube, Apple, Spotify, wherever they get their podcasts. Share it with everybody. You got the Global Church podcast and Fellowship Family one as well that you can engage with here at Fellowship Bible Church.
If I can just shout out, I have been really enjoying Global Church podcasts, have really stepped up their game. And I have just been like, I have been devouring those lately. And so I just highly, highly, highly recommend those.
Great. I appreciate it. And those guys are all over the map these days.
So quite literally.
You will really get to hear what God is doing around the world if you listen to any one of those. Well, the fact of the matter, guys, is that sermons are not meant just to take an hour, but rather transform a lifetime. Until next week, much love. God bless.